Support comes from KGNU listener members and the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud supporter of organizations working to improve STEM education to enhance students' creativity, critical thinking, and financial literacy skills.
That was La Luce Sigue. Next up, Outsources.
Good evening, and welcome to Outsources, Colorado's only weekly radio program devoted to the people and issues of the LGBTQ and allied communities. I'm Glenda Russell, and I'm joined in the studio by Janice Bohan of the Outsources Collective. Our guest this evening is Ann Noonan, who has worked in the field of behavioral health with a special focus on substance use disorders and treatment for over 30 years. Ann is also active in local politics and is a past member of the Out Boulder County Board, where she served for 6 years. Ann, welcome to Outsources. We appreciate you joining us this evening to talk about this important topic.
Thanks, and thanks to the collective for the invitation.
Let's start by asking what may seem like a really obvious question to many. Why would it be important for us to have an Outsources show focused on the issue of alcohol and other substance use among members of the queer community?
Well, just right off the bat, the numbers demonstrate that our community, our queer community, uses at a rate of double the heterosexual community, and so heterosexual and cisgender. So right there, we have a problem. We have double the use, double the disorder, double the amount of folks entering treatment, and our youth are at even higher rates than those.
What is going on?
Well, I think part of it is just being part of a marginalized community, and an easy way of bonding is substances, an easy way of handling stress is substances, and so you add that to trying to find a community. The bar becomes a gathering place. With youth, we often see using drugs and alcohol to get along with the other marginalized communities, the pot smokers out on the yard before they find their queer community, so they've already initiated use of drugs and alcohol from an earlier age.
And that includes tobacco, of course, in that among young queer folks, actually in older queer folks as well.
Yeah. Tobacco and sugar, the ultimate gateway drugs.
Everybody used them. I have this historical question. Back in the day, the bars were often the only place where you could find community, or nearly the only place. Mm-hmm. Particularly maybe for men, women also had softball diamonds. I'm not sure where else guys could go. Oh, the baths, I guess. But seriously, the bars were so central to the community back in the day. And as we have found more community and more visibility and more places to interact, are the bars still as important? And can we still attribute the over... the high numbers of queer use of substances to this sort of focus on bars?
To the bar scene?
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the questions we get a lot, and when I was working more closely with Out Boulder, why don't we have a gay bar in Boulder? And it was kind of this outrage that people had. Why don't we have a gay bar?
Yeah.
And a lot of it is assimilation, right? It's people feel more comfortable to be part of 20 different special interest groups. So there's gay hiking clubs, there's, GLBTQ friendly churches, there's, all of the different options that people have more than just the bar.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's a central gathering place, and our rates of use are double despite the change that's happened over the last 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Is that lower than it was when the bars were so central? I mean, was it more than double?
Well, part of the problem is we have terrible data.
It wasn't until
2015 that they even began asking about only sexual orientation and not about gender identity in the National Household Survey, which is kind of the gold standard for rates of use.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have data to measure what it looked like
right.
30 years ago or
right.
something.
It seems likely that if we look at the research across different marginalized groups, we see that, in with one exception, people who are in marginalized groups have greater use of alcohol, as well as greater incidence of depression and anxiety, than do the corresponding groups of people who are privileged by that. So, for instance, people with disabilities have greater use of substance abuse than people without disabilities. People of color have greater substance use problems than people who are white. And that's pretty much across the board, with the sole exception of women don't have greater levels of substance abuse than men do, although we're catching up fast. So I think a piece of this is not just about bars, and you didn't say it was just about bars, but a piece about this is it's pretty clear discrimination does things to people that are not good for them, and that's what we're seeing. Even if you have more resources, you still have to deal with the prejudice that's there and the various kinds of discrimination that either are happening or might happen to you at any given time.
That low level or sometimes high level of stress just from living in our culture, right? Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think, if given that we know this and given that we now have some pretty decent data about it, although not as much as we would like, actually I want to interrupt myself and ask a question. I've seen data in the past year for all kinds of groups in the United States, including people who have a great deal of privilege, anxiety and depression are up. We live in political times that are making people nervous. Have you seen any impact of that on substance abuse? It would probably be more anecdotal, but I'm just wondering what impact that's had on the use of substances among queer folks.
It would be anecdotal, but what I have seen is, yes, we've seen an increase in use of services in Boulder County. I'm doing some work in Larimer County, seeing the same thing there. We're seeing methamphetamine use really go up.
And it's back.
And that hits disproportionately in our gay male population.
Right.
And so as that is increasing, and then, of course, everybody's favorite topic, the opiate epidemic.
Right.
So that has been steadily rising over the last 15 years or so, and we have not hit the peak of that yet.
And is that in queer communities at the same disproportionate level as other substance use?
The research I was looking at showed that we were almost double in every category of drugs and alcohol.
Including opiate
including
use.
Meth, including opiates, including tobacco, as Glenda pointed out at the beginning, that we have a much higher rate of tobacco use in the queer communities. So, yeah, all across the board. Interestingly, I find it interesting, lesbians are a very high rate of alcohol use, while the gay men are a very high rate of meth use in terms of the highest drug of abuse in that population.
Do you have any suspicions about why that is?
Well, meth is sort of entwined in the bar scene, in the rave, dance, stereotypical gay male bar
clubbing
scene,
I think.
Women tend to drink home. They tend to drink alone. Mm-hmm. It's not really attached to the bar scene so much, but if you have women who drink and they're women together drinking, I think that's just a more acceptable use, perhaps.
Now, you've hit on a whole bunch of factors that influence the elevated rates of substance use and substance abuse by people in the queer community. How do we interrupt? How do we intervene in that? How do we do something about that?
I think what we're seeing in recent time is more of an emphasis on health in our community and really taking a look at, are we being made guinea pigs, or not guinea pigs, but are we being used by targeted advertising? There are cigarette ads that clearly are targeting queer community, alcohol ads. Alcohol has always seen us as a very promising demographic. So kind of pushing back on that as a queer community and saying, you know, we're more than that. We can do better than that. And let's really address that within ourselves, within our own community.
And that's such an important issue, and it's so critical because often alcohol funds a lot of pride parades in this country.
Well, and that's been, yes, that's, and we've relied on alcohol advertisers. They were, of course, the first people that would advertise in queer magazines and queer media and supporting gay pride. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, what's happened is we've become dependent on them to support gay pride, and now we have some marijuana money coming in as well. But here's the deal. If we don't want that, we have to change that. And if the queer community does not want to be supported by alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana industry, then we have to step up and pay for pride ourselves. That's and not right, yeah. not expect to be hosted.
Yeah.
This is a, really interesting question, I think, sort of the cultural issue of the circular process that happens here of we provide alcohol as the support for our events and then wonder why we consume more alcohol. And it's sort of a self-sustaining process. We have the in Denver the Coors Pride Parade and or mm-hmm. Pride Festival.
Right. And Coors did a marvelous public relations campaign reversal when the queer community was very much part of the union boycott of Coors, and they sort of remade their image with us. Thank you, Ms. Cheney.
That's right.
Dick Cheney's
That's
daughter
right.
was right. their media person for Coors at that time, and they came in and started strongly supporting Denver Pride.
Bought their way back into the...
They did indeed.
To the now, we have brew pubs in Boulder. We don't really have Coors supporting us.
Well, actually, speaking of Boulder, I was really pleased to see that Boulder's name... funder was not a beer company at all.
It was not,
And I think that's a great statement.
And I think it speaks to trying to diversify our support and, bless them for coming to us and starting to advertise and giving us at least some corporate blessing, and now that spread. Then we had Subaru, then we've had, we've kind of moved through, and now people do want to have their names on our banners.
Yeah.
So we need to take advantage of that as well.
That's right.
The let me just interrupt a second. Seagate, who sponsored Boulders, also sponsored Longmont's, so Pride. So it's an interesting sort of beginning of a trend away from alcohol, although there's still plenty of alcohol support for Out Boulder events. Whoever it is, vodka company shows up a lot.
We have, Out Boulder has several alcohol vendors that have been strong supporters, but we also, Out Boulder has also offered many sober events, and to try to go back to speaking to how do we change it, we have a pool party where there's no alcohol, we have Longmont Pride where there is no alcohol, so we're trying to make a mix of activities.
That's great.
But there is supply and demand, and as long as the demand is there, we'll still be meeting some of those requests.
That's true. In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU, Denver, Boulder, Fort Collins. This evening, we're talking about alcohol and substance use in the LGBT community with our guest, Anne Noonan. Anne, I've heard you say on multiple occasions that your work with substance use disorders and recovery is linked to issues of social justice. Could you talk about that a bit?
Well, just starting from our conversation today, certainly marginalized communities have higher rates of substance use, but we also have higher rates of incarceration because of substance abuse, higher rates of hospitalization because of substance abuse and other disorders. We have higher rates of comorbidity with mental health and also other health issues. We look at social determinants of these kinds of health issues, and let's look at lesbians again for a minute. Women traditionally, or still to this day, are much higher or much lower paid as a class, and then lesbian women even lower than that. Trans women are the lowest economic status in the queer community. So we have those issues that are social justice issues. Incarceration is a huge passion for me because basically we're putting people in prison for having an addiction, which is a health issue, which is a brain disease. And when you look at our arrest and incarceration rates, people of color, of course, are highly overrepresented. We see high representations, disproportionate representations of trans persons in prisons and jails. So those are some of the overlaps as well.
And we really, I mean, it is, you know, as you say, it's sort of startling to think that we are incarcerating people for the consequences of what is really a social illness, if you will, and not an individual misbehavior. You know,
it's a combination, though, because it is an individual illness. It's an addiction for that particular person, and it causes real social damage. And so we can't discount that. At the same time, we should not be incarcerating people for possession, for relapse. We probably should be incarcerating people who kill someone in a drunk driving accident. I mean, there are things with serious repercussions, and people have to be responsible for that. My main objection is once you get in the system, you stay in the system through relapse and recidivism. You get recidivated back into the system. And for somebody with an addiction, it's almost impossible to pull yourself back out of the legal system because every hot UA puts you back in jail or prison.
Yeah. Every what?
Hot, having a positive urinalysis for drugs or alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, that was a stigmatizing comment. We're really trying to change the stigma around the way we talk about drugs and alcohol, and calling it a hot UA or a dirty UA is a stigmatizing statement.
Oh, interesting.
Nice catch. You had mentioned that there are some local initiatives going on that are relevant to this discussion. What are you seeing out there?
You know, I've worked in Boulder County for a long time, and over the last 20 years, I've been really proud to work on a number of initiatives that we've had. We have one program, one of the earliest programs that was a jail diversion program, is called the PACE program, and it diverted people from jail for low-level offenses who had mental illness and substance abuse problems. And we found that there were queer folks in that program, too. So and at a disproportionate rate. Who knew? So that program has been very successful. It's known across the country. Hmm. More recently, we're doing a lot of co-responder programs right now. So you'll see that in the city of Boulder, the county of Boulder, city of Longmont, where they have a social worker or a mental health clinician going out on 911 calls and actually diverting the arrest right from there to get people into the care that they need. So those kinds of things really change the fabric. We're also working more closely with hospitals, detox, social services, bringing the whole circle of care together so you can address poverty disparities, homelessness, child welfare issues.
And do you have the sense that the people who are doing those kinds of programs are skilled in the particular needs of the queer community as well as the, you know, general folks who are caught up in
Thanks for asking that earlier when you said what can we do as a community to really help our community in these issues. That's a huge issue, to have informed people working with our community and working in a non-discriminatory way, a supportive way, informed as to what our special issues are. And so there are initiatives within our county and nationally to help educate people. But unfortunately, almost anybody can just put gay-friendly on their directory listing.
Right, safe zone.
So, yeah, safe zone sticker.
Yeah.
So we really have to try to make sure that people are actually walking the talk.
Mm-hmm. And that's a large task. I think about this, I laugh about the safe zone sticker, but having worked in education for a while around programs, safe zone programs in educational settings, it really is true that people claim that label and put the sticker on their door who haven't done very much work in really getting mm-hmm. sensitive to those issues. So that's a huge task right. when you think about educating all the people in the many systems you're trying to coordinate,
right.
Or even educating a cadre of people who will respond when this might be a circumstance that's relevant.
Right. I can remember being in treatment myself. There was a gay man in treatment with me who had a significant other, and the treatment center insisted on having his parents come as his significant others rather than his partner. And those kinds of things still continue to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Trans issues are very difficult. We've had issues, not so much anymore in Boulder County, but it's still an issue in our foster system
mm-hmm.
where trans youth are not being placed in the foster home that supports their gender identity. So those kinds of things are still happening.
And in incarceration, it's still an issue, right?
It's a huge issue, yeah.
Let me ask you an impossible question. Janice said this is a huge issue. This is probably impossible. But if you could do one thing in Boulder County to educate caregivers in general, caregivers around substance abuse in general, about better treatment for the queer population, what would that be?
Wow.
How long do we have?
I really think there's a lot of entwining of the stigma against substance abuse
mm-hmm.
itself
mm-hmm.
and the stigma against the queer community. So you have that double whammy. So I guess the one magic wand would be that people that are in the helping professions educate themselves about both those issues and become familiar, not through, relying, but by doing their own education, by working on it themselves, and mm-hmm. not allowing their clients to have to be the ones that teaches them about their community's issues.
Yeah, really. Really, we don't have a lot more time, but I want to ask something that we often ask on this show, which is this. What haven't we mentioned that really should be part of this discussion about substance use in the queer community?
I would say because we have always been a fairly substance circled community, we still have a lot of work to do around creating more support for sobriety, creating more support for recovery, even as something as simple as serving delicious soft drinks instead of tap water at parties.
That's a great point.
And just changing that kind of culture. And so that would be one of the things I would say.
Okay. And if you could take any message to the queer community itself that would have an impact on substance use among us, what would that message be?
I would say even with the high rates in our community, not everyone drinks and drugs to manage their feelings or their issues. And therapy is available, support is available, recovery options are available. The people that use are often more visible than those of us that don't.
It's really
to kind of create some visibility for those in recovery, and that's an option for any of us.
Yeah. And going back to the pool party, that's one of the ways that happens. It's one of many ways. And you started that pool party, as I recall.
I did, actually, to celebrate a sobriety anniversary.
That's right, yeah.
And 10 years
later.
The
pool party for people who, has it been 10 years?
It has been 10 years. This was the 11th pool party 10 years later.
For those who don't know, the pool party is a... not pool as in billiards, but pool as in swimming party.
It's in Longmont at the Sunset Pool.
An all-sober evening party. We take over the entire pool and play and have a good time, and an annual event at this point, thanks to Anne and her sobriety party.
It's an amazing demonstration of we can have a great time doing something that many people associate with alcohol. But it's alcohol and other substances free.
Right.
Especially in talking about this, about what we can be doing, I think especially of youth and the need for youth to have models that are, that are substance-free models, if you will, or that are non-substance-using models. And it is true that the most visible things... I think that's true. The most visible things around have to do with substances, the bars and drag shows and
Some drag shows.
Yeah, some drag shows. I mean, there are always exceptions, but I wonder what kind of efforts are being made to work directly with youth to sort of say being queer does not mean necessarily mean drinking and substance use.
Well, I think the Longmont Pride is a perfect example of that. Longmont Pride started many years ago through OASIS, the youth program through Boulder County Public Health, and that's how... Well, there's another story of the other Longmont Pride, but the current iteration of it, and it's youth-driven, it was youth-designed. It's now been taken over by Out Boulder to run, but we remain true to those roots of it being a youth and family-oriented event. There is no alcohol, there's no tobacco, no other substances, and people have a fabulous time.
Imagine that.
And there isn't a drinking after party or any of those things.
That I can't speak to.
People can do anything on their own
time.
Exactly.
Times.
Right.
Unfortunately, we are running out of time. We want to first thank Ann Noonan for sharing her time and her expertise. And thanks to you, our listening audience, without whom we wouldn't be here. We hope you'll join us again next week for another edition of Outsources. But before we close, we have an important announcement. The Outsources Collective, a small group of volunteer producers who create the shows you hear each week, is searching for one or two new independent, committed team members with knowledge of and experience in the queer community. We are committed to values associated with multicultural competence and the active inclusion of multiple perspectives and backgrounds. We work to have these values enacted in our programming and in our team operations. We invite applications from individuals who share these values and who bring a commitment to working with us to use all our differences to enhance our individual, team, and community engagement. If you or someone you know might be interested in such a position, please write to us at outsources@kgnu.org and request information about the application process. And now, here's Janice for some information you'll want to know about.
And now for a few announcements. First, at 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, September 12th and Wednesday, September 19th, bring a friend along to learn about being a straight ally. How do you respond when someone makes an inappropriate comment or joke? What do LGBTQ people need from allies in today's climate of hate, separation, and disenfranchisement? Join the conversation at Straight for Equality at the Althea Center at 1400 Williams Street in Denver. For more information, visit the Althea Center Facebook page, that's A-L-T-H-E-A, and click on Events. Then, throughout the month of September, Out Boulder County is conducting an LGBTQ community assessment survey to learn about community members' needs and preferences for programming and advocacy. We encourage all members of the LGBTQ community to take the survey, which is available in digital format to make access easy. After the window for the survey closes, Out Boulder and many other organizations will use the data collected to better serve the LGBTQ community by offering better resources and programming. For more information, visit outboulder.org. Finally, Out Boulder County is also conducting a series of focus groups for members of the community aged 50 and older. The goal is to discuss issues of importance to older adults, consider how programming can better address the interests and needs of this group, and identify opportunities for intergenerational engagement. If you're interested in participating, you can find the contact information at outboulder.org. That's our show for this evening. Thanks for listening in, and please join us again next week for another edition of Outsources, right here on KGNU 88.5, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins, or listen anytime at kgnu.org/outsources. You can also follow our programming on the KGNU news blog at news.kgnu.org. If you'd like to comment on this or any Outsources program, please feel free to email us at outsources@kgnu.org. Thanks for joining us. See you next week.
It's just 7 o'clock here on a Monday evening. You're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. 7 o'clock on a Monday evening, that means it's time for the Opera Box. Well, good evening and welcome in the Opera Box. I'm your host, Ron Nadell. Tonight, my playlist takes us to fairy tale land with scenes from fairy tale operas such as Heinrich Mechner's opera, Hans Heiling, the King of the River Pixies. And we're going to hear great scenes from fairy tales by Engelbert Humperdinck, Gioachino Rossini, Karl Orff, Antonin Dvorak, and Bela Bartok. So snuggle up and join me for tonight's Once Upon a Time in Opera.
Ich liebe dich.